Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. Today's a special episode. I have one of my all-time best friends and people I admire and who I love hanging out with. And so this is just one of those opportunities to stay connected in a deeper way. With me today is Kelly Sullivan Walden. Kelly is a lot of things. You're an amazing person, a book writer, maybe 10, I don't know, hard to keep track. Someone I've traveled with, done adventures with, done projects with, create sort of what our futures look like. And so we're just going to dive into lots of stuff going on. Kelly's most recent book, maybe some new projects she's working on. I think you're going to love the conversation. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Joe, I am so honored to be with you. I'm definitely feeling like a pinch me moment because I hold you in such high esteem. Your emails come into my inbox every day it's like you're kind of like larger than life to me, and you're my friend, and I'm so lucky to get to call you friend and to get to reach out and to have these conversations. I'm absolutely honored to have this special time with you. Thank you for bringing me on.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. I like this sort of the idea of the Mutual Admiration Society. For those of you who don't have a chance to write this daily blog, I'm coming up on 4,000 posts. I'm a few away from that. Yeah, I don't even know if any sense, like, could I have ever done that, really?
That's incredible. Wow. So how many years has it been? Daily, every day?
10 years every day, but more than 10, because that would be 3,650. So I'm coming up on 11 years. And you start these things, Kelly, right? And we don't know where they're going. I'm sure, like, when you wrote the first book first, it's intimidating, right? To write a book.
Yes.
And then do I write a second book? And then now you probably have a flow. But why don't we dive in a little, reintroduce you to our listeners. Let's show me your current version of your story up to sort of where we are today.
Oh my goodness. The current version of my story.
Well, it was different 10 years ago when we talked.
Has it been?
Almost.
Wow. Whoa. I guess if I was going to express my story at the moment. I was just talking to somebody the other day. So I just recently took 6 weeks off, and I've never done that. And I did some work while I was there. I was in France, and I'm so grateful that my husband Dana and I had the chance to do that. But it was a very unplugged time for me. I made time. You and I connected. There was a few special people in my world that I connected with, but mostly I just unplugged and just kind of was in the moment. And where is the moment taking me? And what do I feel like doing? And that was so wonderful because my life, my default mode is very gung-ho, very achievement oriented. And I love that. So I'm coming back to LA, which has a buzz about it. Like there's a buzz to create. And that's amazing. It's an amazing place to be. Not that we can't create anywhere. I mean, my God, people have created in Turkish prisons. So we can create anywhere if need be. But I'm finding that I'm really enjoying that I do have this creative outlet to write books, and that it wasn't always like that. Before I published my first book, I had about 50 partially completed books with nowhere to go. So there was a lot of kind of clogging up the system. But once the first book got out, and I said, my life for the last almost 15 years has been write a book, edit a book, publish a book, promote a book, start over again, write a book, edit a book, publish the book. I mean, and it's without a break. And so it's good to just kind of stop and reflect. And it's a quality. It's if I have a problem, it's a quality problem that there's like a lot of like do. And I know you can relate to that. There's a lot of like, what's the next challenge? What's the next challenge? So it feels like it's a lovely moment for me to be in right now as it's, in real time, it's fall, it's cooling off. I feel like I'm cooling off. I feel centered. I feel like I'm really appreciating the moments that I have to connect with friends, to slow down. And I also am appreciating my moments of creation. So if people are new to me, my work is as Dr. Dream. I've written a lot of dream books. I do a lot of media with regards to helping people to understand the language of the genius language of their dreams and to not take their dreams lying down And my recent book is called The Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste, which seems like a departure from dreams, but it's related in a strange way because I've found that over the years, my specialty, I think we narrow in some ways. Yes, we want to stay expansive, but we also find our niche. And part of my niche is helping people learn how to look at tragic situations like nightmares, because I get so many of those from clients. And I have a natural gift, it seems, for being able to look at something that seems at the surface just like the worst thing ever. And I can start to, I look for the gold and I find it. And by looking for the gold, the picture starts to change. The narrative starts to change. And we realize that we have more directorial input on our dreams and on our waking life than we might have ever imagined. So that's what this latest book is about, using a lot of my own stories. You're in one of those. I save it for last, right near the end. But it's a way of being able to look at things and transform what seems like the tragic and look for the magic and let it absolutely become something magical such that you would never wish it were otherwise, which might sound very strange, but yeah.
I want to dig into that, but I want, because there's lots of people who always think about, oh, I would like to write a book. What, I know you had book projects going on, but why form? What was it that attracted you to writing something in the book form?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't know. It actually didn't start off as a book. I was just telling a friend the other day that my very first book, called Discover Your Inner Goddess Queen, An Inspirational Journey from Drama Queen to Goddess Queen, it didn't start off as a book. It just started off as this kind of a healing download that I got while I was in a therapy session. I was having a real dark night of the soul, like very dark night of the soul. And in this meditation, I saw what I will call my drama queen self, the part of me that used to see the glass half empty, felt like the victim to everything. Why has this always happened to me? And then I saw the goddess queen kind of juxtaposed, like a split screen, the two different Kellys. The goddess queen, that's just a name that I gave her, was the one that saw everything very differently, was much more metaphysically oriented to the big picture and could see the beauty no matter what was going on. And I saw her as like a mother figure that enveloped the drama queen that was more of a teenage figure. And I felt such an epiphany after that session that I just started to write down some of the bare bones of what I was experiencing so that I wouldn't forget it. Because I was all too aware that I had had insights before that were gone. When I needed them most, I couldn't find them. Mm-hmm. So I was writing down, sort of like wrangling an insight, like pulling down a star from the sky and saying, I'm going to put you here so that I can find you when I need you. And I was sharing about this to a new friend that I was working with, somebody that I really only saw once. And she said, ooh, tell me about that. Because I started to say, I'm going to lead a goddess gathering. I'm going to bring women together. I have this format that came to me. She said, oh, I'd like to do that. Can you tell me how you did it? So I started to write what became my book for this woman that I've never seen again. And one day I'll see her and I'll say, here, thank you. But she started the process. It started it in service to myself, because I wanted to remember what was happening, but service to this other person. That's what kicked it over the edge. If it was just for me, I don't think I would have ever elaborated enough to get it into a book. But yeah, that's how it started.
So in some sense, you developed a method to go from where you were to where you wanted to be. And this was going to be one of your tools in your toolkit.
Yeah. I found in the process of writing this book, and Dana, actually, my husband, plays a huge part in this book, because I started to read little pieces that I was putting together to him. And he was like, that's really good. Read more. And I was so nervous, but I thought he was going to laugh at me, because I didn't think of myself as a writer. I'm not a writer. Not at all. I'm a talker, not a writer. But I found that in the process of writing this book, I found it to be so empowering. I mean, I had come out of the acting world where I would go on 100 auditions and get maybe one job out of those 100. And out of all that time, energy, money. And it was so, in many ways, empowering when I got the job. But I wasn't in control. I was in the passenger seat, and writing my book put me completely in the driver's seat. I got to, like, even the word author is about having authority. over your life. So I felt like I took, instead of being the girl that was like, pick me, like me, like me. I was like, I'm picking myself. I'm casting myself as the lead in my own, my own life. And it was so empowering that when I talk to you, when we first talked about your book, I get so adamant, like, you got to write your book. You got to do it. You got to do it, because there's something about it. I mean, how did you find that for you when you're in telling your story and putting your wisdom into print? Did you find it to be the same?
There's a type of person who is reluctant to write a book because they're not worthy, right? What did we grow up with? You know,
who do you think you are?
Right. Faulkner, you know.
Yes.
Well, these are literary classics. And then if you did read a Stephen King novel or something, you're like, well, but that's not me. And then all of a sudden you find yourself with the potential to tell a story, maybe about yourself or about something you've learned along the way. And I think the first step is you have to get over yourself, and you're the obstacle. And you did a lot of convincing with me on that. And once I got over that, then I realized that the second thing you learn is you really write for yourself, right? You're doing a process, you're doing some thinking, maybe you're clearing, maybe you're creating. And so that's a really good, even if it's a labor, that's a effort.
It is a labor.
And then the third part of it, which is the part that sort of is the only one that gets celebrated, is, oh, it got published. Oh, how many copies? Are you on a list? And that part, and then maybe the feedback that you get. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You're amazing. But that isn't, so once I got that whole thing in my head, then it was very satisfying. And, you know, probably will work on the next book, because then you start to develop the next thing to say. But now you have that hump, and now you can craft and create in a different way, which is what you now have going on.
Yeah. But I also want to acknowledge you, because there was something in the process of, as we were talking about your book, and I remember leaning on you to tell more of your personal story, at least some of it, to establish that you didn't start off as Mr. High Performance Life, like you as the high performance life. You didn't start off that way at all. And to me, that was almost equally as impressive as all the accolades, because I needed to know that I could relate to you, that you weren't superhuman and beyond me. And as I was saying that, I remember there was a very clear moment as I was so adamant, almost yelling at you. I had this moment of, maybe you should just point the finger back at yourself. And I found it much easier in my books to write from the mountaintop perspective, like, here's all my wisdom. And curtsy, mic drop, as opposed to the more vulnerable, this is who I was before that wisdom came in, and this is how I came to this wisdom. So you have been an absolutely vital part of the deepening of my story and my writing. And people have told me that my latest book is their favorite because it meets them at a deeper level, because I'm willing to reveal more of my imperfections and the parts of me that I was actually, frankly, ashamed of. And in the process of writing it, I'm a lot less ashamed. In fact, I might even say I'm even proud of those parts of me that were so wobbly and jiggly and not what I wanted to wear on my sleeve. It's the humanity. And it's kind of boring to just see like perfection, perfection, perfection. That's not real. So it's hard to do it. And I think we start wherever we are. And there's also a principle I want to recognize regarding just the high performance book writing aspect of things. In the way that you write your blog, I don't know what it's like. I haven't sat next to you as you were writing, but because you're writing every day and you've produced 4,000 blogs, I imagine that there's not too much time to have to think and criticize and judge and wrestle. It's more like inspiration, write it, send it. I mean, a little bit of editing, I'm sure, but there's not like, who am I? I can't do this. Maybe I'm not good enough. It's just like, it's coming to me. I got to get it out. Keep the pipes clear. It's not for you to judge. It's for you to express. And you do it, I imagine, with an eye towards service. Like, maybe this is what inspires me. Maybe this will inspire other people. Is that true?
You hope. Oh, for sure. I think that the other part for me that there's so much you don't expect. I really appreciate anything that takes a long time, because during that time, there are surprises. And I was asked many times as I've done this blog, like, when are you going to stop writing it? And I always now have like the question that that's not the right question, right? That's the wrong question. That question has that there's something that I was doing rather than the way I was living. And if you consider it the way you live, then would you say that Thursday is your last day? Like, you wouldn't do that. So this is part of my living. And I didn't know that though when I started. Like, it was, oh yeah, write it for a year, write it for a week, whatever you might have. But then you cross over to the other side, which is that you have now created another part of yourself. And I think of the journey that is open to all of us, whether we're creating content, we're going on a physical journey, we're studying, we're helping, coaching. All this is about sort of the more you do it, the deeper it gets ingrained in who you are. And then you find out something that you never knew you could find out.
Ooh, God, I'm listening to you from a few different places. And there's this very vulnerable part of me that just heard what you said and is so grateful that you said that, because I noticed that I have, this is not the whole of me, but a little teeny part of me has always been afraid, like, oh God, I hope, like, is this going to be the last blog? Is this going to be his last one? Like, is there ever going to be a day that Joe stops? And that will be a heartbreaking day for me. Mm-hmm. That would be like, is the world going to stop spinning? I'm addicted to your blogs, and I would be heartbroken on the day, or if that day ever comes, even from the other side, like whenever you expire in this life, I hope that you're able to channel it through another vessel to keep it going. But I love that it's not just the doing, it's the being, it's the character of you. So that, yeah, that's wonderful. And then of course, we can stop whenever we need to. If there's something else that comes through that says, I'm going to do this now with that time. But I mean, certainly you have that choice at any point. Yeah, I mean,
I think you do, but I think you don't in some way. I think that the reasons why I think some people struggle in life is they don't know what they can count on. If you want success.
Right. Yeah.
It's easy to be more successful when you feel like you have support, when there's a strong foundation, when you have something, whether it's your parents, your friends, yourself, the stuff that you write tries to wrestle out of people sort of the sense of who they are so that they can then lean in. And usually when you don't lean in, it's because of these externalities that we're counting on. And so if any of us are capable of delivering on that, then we should. Like, that is part of our own human condition that we should accept.
Yep.
I'm sure there are people who count on you in the same way, whether it's, even if it's episodic. Kelly, I got this dream and it's really troubling me, but I haven't talked to you in 2 years. Mm-hmm. They want to know you're there, right? It doesn't have to be.
Right.
Just that confidence is important.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know that I sometimes, in the laboratory of my own being, I check myself, like, because dreams have been my vehicle, my Trojan horse, we could say, because it's not just about dreams. It's about, I would say, liberation. It's about, dreams are an avenue. They're a ladder to the roof of self-actualization. And it's a worthy and it's a beautiful ladder, but there is other ladders. It just happens to be one that I love and we all have access to. So, I feel like in the laboratory of myself, I am kind of rebellious. And I think we all sort of are in some way, where I'm like, maybe I'm done with dreams. And maybe I am. I don't want to force something if it's not meant to be. But so I've broken up with dreams many times in my own mind, but they keep coming back. They keep coming back. Mm-hmm. And what's good about that is that I realize that it's not just, I think self-will is important, but I also would prefer that my self-will be in the passenger seat and not the driver's seat. I'd rather be in support of something bigger and higher and then rally all my attention there. So I feel like sometimes I have to be willing to let go of things. But like that saying, if it's yours, I mean, if you love something, set it free. And if it's yours, it comes back. And if it doesn't, then maybe you're complete with that. Maybe you're done. But I find that there are a handful of things, and I could even say my relationship with Dana. Before him, I was a serial monogamist. I was in and out of relationships every year, basically. So when the first time we hit a rocky patch. I was like, all right, bye. But then he kept coming back and we kept coming back. And it's like, I can't get rid of him and I don't want to, but it's like and there's people in my life that I can go years without talking to, but we come back. And over time, and this is one of the blessings of getting older, is that the people, the projects, the things that do stick become foundational, and they turn gold. They become truly, truly sacred, not just because we have to hoard everything, but because these are our people, these are our projects, this is our work to do. And then, yeah, there's something really sacred about that. And we can only get there with time, when in the beauty of hindsight of time. Now that I'm on the other side of 50, I can say these kind of things. It's a blessing. Maybe it's the first quarter of life, who knows, but like, whatever, we're experimenting.
I think that there are some of those frameworks that are never really that helpful. Like, does it matter to say how old you are? Because like, if that just creates an image or an impression of what that means, then did that really help, you know? So yeah. As you write these books, you get these insights. One of the things that, and we can even connect it back to my blog, which is you sort of think you run out, but there is no, you never, Dana's a songwriter, you never run out of songs to write. Maybe the will, but never, it's always more, right? So like, but do you have any techniques you use to generate new ideas and to think about what's next, or does it just all organically come to you?
I think it's pretty organic. And I would say that it's kind of like being a magpie, where I am attuned to those bright and shiny glimmers. And like, I'll hear something that somebody says, something that my friend Joe writes in a blog, something that a friend will say, or I'll hear in a podcast, or and I'll go, oh, wow, that really hits me. It hits an emotional place. And so I'll journal that. One tool or technique that I have to give props to Julia Cameron. She wrote a book called The Artist's Way with Mark Bryan. And years ago, I took an Artist's Way class. This was like 25, maybe 30 years ago at this point, probably closer to 30 years. I was in a workshop, and really the workshop is just about getting connected to your creativity. And by virtue of doing that, all these different gentle and pretty profound ways of stepping the inner critic aside so that the creativity can flow. Right. So I did the workshop. And then after I was done, I was invited by a group of people that wanted to do the workshop, and they asked me to lead it for them since I had been through it. And then after I did that, another group asked, and another group asked, and another group asked, and for about a decade, I was living and breathing the artist's way. And in the process, so one of the techniques that Julia Cameron talks about is these things called morning pages. And it's where you write three stream of consciousness longhand pages every day without any intent, without any desire that they be good. In fact, they should be bad. They should just be like the drain, that she calls it the brain drain. It's just a way of just kind of getting caught up with yourself, and even giving yourself permission to be nitpicky and judgy and like, oh, well, that person didn't call me, or what did that mean? How come blah, blah, blah? And then out of nowhere, there's this book, the Discover Your Inner Goddess Queen book. It came in right around that same time that I started practicing morning pages. So I would say to write a book, journaling is a wonderful tool just to get in the practice of flowing, thought to expression. Without any thought. I mean, I think the thinking mind is a wonderful tool that should come in after just that inspired flow. So that's one thing that I highly recommend. I mean, read Julia Cameron's book. And also there's another one, Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, that is, I would say it's kind of like The Artist's Way, the next generation. It's very much about just trusting your creative flow. And then I start to notice, like, for example, if I'm on a deadline for a book, this happens all the time. I'll be working diligently, but ideas will start to come for another project. And I'll just keep lists of different ideas that go into different bins for different books, because I'm not going to shut the creative stream off to stay over here, but I'm not going to veer off either. But I'll just say, I'm listening, I'm paying attention. I'll give myself a little. So I have open documents. Whenever I'm writing, there's about 20 open documents in the end, because things will go in different places. But It also, it helps when there is a deadline, I have to say, because I might, without a deadline, I could meander a lot because the work is never done. Like you said, the moment you're done with one book, you realize, oh, wait a minute, I didn't say that thing and that thing and that thing. And they're all so important. Well, guess what? They go in the next book. Because even if you added those things into the current book, by the time you added those in, there would be 10 other things that you didn't put in. It's because this is what it's like to be a spiritual being having a human experience. There is a continuous flow. There is never an end to it. It is a river that doesn't stop. And once you tap in, you realize, oh my God, I never have to worry. It's just, you just dip in your toe and then it's there. Do you find that?
Yeah. And I think the other part that is good advice, I think, to anyone who might want to write anything for whatever the purpose is, you never write the final copy with the first words.
Oh God, no.
Right. And no. You have to get used to that. Like, to your point, write down just three thoughts is very powerful if you really want, and just iterate on them, improve them. And the process produces the outcome, not the, oh, I have this big idea, I'm going to write it perfectly and I'm done.
Oh my God.
Right?
No. Killer.
Iteration is really important.
There's a dear friend of mine who has had this big idea that I love, that I'm in absolute support of. And it's so big that it continues to not get done because the pressure for it to, it's almost like there's this idea that you get this great idea. And in the writing of it, the angels will sing and the butterflies will land on your shoulder and you'll be fed by, I mean, like everything will just happen in this grace. And it's just not like that. It's a blue collar job. It's like you got to get greasy.
Yeah.
What's that?
It's a good characterization.
Yeah. This is also why I am a huge fan of the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, those 12 stages to me are the gospel. Because one of the things I love about it, he enumerates, and almost everybody at this point has heard of the hero's journey, but he has articulated these 12 elements that are predictable outcomes or predictable aspects of a noble quest. Whenever you do something of merit, which is to write a blog, write a book, it's a noble thing. It's something that is out of the ordinary. It takes something to do it. So he says, well, you are going to have moments of inspiration. You are going to meet allies along the path, but you're also going to get swallowed up in the belly of the whale. You're going to have a depressive moment where you think it's all crap. And then you're going to have a big test where somebody's going to say, you can't write this. Or you turn it into them and they say, we don't want this. This is dreck. Or you realize, oh my God, if I say this, then nobody's going to speak to me. I mean, you're going to be tested. And then there will be gold. There will be a reward. And then, I mean, it just kind of helps you to have a sense of, it's like kind of like a sense of control in an out of control kind of scenario, because you have a little bit of the blueprint. And I find that every time I write a book, the stages are almost like clockwork. I'm going to be inspired on one day, and then I'm going to feel like this is trash the next. But if I keep going, eventually the book comes out, and eventually I'm so grateful and people love it. And it seems so easy in the end.
You have to love the process too, though, right, Kelly? I mean,
yes.
Get the process, love the process, love the,
yeah.
The creation isn't linear at all.
Yes.
In that it's very, that's why it's so satisfying when we're done. I actually think that what I have learned to appreciate, again, back to this challenge over time. So set out a year goal is something you have to do every day. And at day 200, you're sort of losing interest. And then the only battle is with yourself. That's it, right?
Right.
Why would we, if we're really conscious beings, not win that battle? Like, what is working against us? So maybe you don't win it the first time or the second time or the third time. But when you start winning that battle, then you have sort of moved yourself to a new level. Because then you have the confidence, I can take on something like that. And I'm not worried about finishing it because I got through those moments where the resistance was inside us and we figured out how to overcome.
Exactly. Yeah. You just bake a cake for it. You just know I'm going to, it's the expectation that the path will be filled with rose petals every day. We have to just let that go. And we have to bake a cake for the difficult moments. So when it happens, we're like, oh, I'm prepared for you. here we go. This is what we do. And I tell people, I would say the belly of the whale stage of the hero's journey used to be my least favorite, but it's now one of my favorites because it's a stage of the journey when everything gets quiet, there's crickets, nothing's happening, where I doubt everything. But I found, just like Joseph Campbell talks about, how if you embrace this stage, if you really drop in, the moment you do that is when the whale spits you out and says, okay, I've done my work with you. And the quicker we embrace it, the quicker we get spouted out, and then we're right back on. So to kind of flow with the resistance. I want to just say, I think about you a lot. We need, in the hero's journey, we have to really acknowledge our allies. And you're an ally on the path because you're always on that hero's journey. You're always full of, like, you always inspire me. And you do have a way of even quantifying your achievements, like counting how many days you're going to do this and how many things you've done. And I think it's a really smart way to do it, because otherwise we just get nebulous about it. We can think that we haven't done anything. Like yesterday, I hit day 300 of Duolingo, which might sound silly to people, but I've been learning French.
That's great.
And while I was in France, so I've never taken a French class in my life. I didn't know any French at all, except for these 3-minute little classes that I would take on Duolingo, which is so simple. I got to France and I knew what people were saying and I could communicate. There were times that I would talk to people that didn't speak any English, and there I was having a conversation because of just these little teeny steps every day, 300 days. I mean, it was a little less than 300 when I was there, but I'm like, oh, it's amazing to do something little, to take baby steps that do add up to something. I'm not fluent, but I'm getting there. I can have a conversation in a foreign language.
That's amazing. But the process that you realize with the patience, right? So like I always say, the key to one's life is in the dictionary. That's your lottery ticket, because you pick words. And they right? So patience, theme in your life. Like if you were patient, yes, and you would give yourself 300 days, then you make progress. If you have optimism, a word in the dictionary, then you'll feel good about the future. If you want to have hope. And so like, it's almost like you pick words and that word has such deep implication, but they're really part of the secret sauce. The thing about that Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey, by the way, you introduced that to me all these years ago. And I've always thought that, boy, he really got it right. And it's a great reminder that if you need to check in where you are, there's confidence you'll end up. But I like this idea that the whale finally spits you out because, like, okay, you got it, kid. You're okay.
Yeah, you don't need me. Get out of here. You don't need me.
That's really cool, though, because we have to end up there for a little while. And
yeah,
even if you don't like the feeling, we can accept it, you know, right? We don't quit on the road to success.
Like, right.
We don't get there. Right.
And I would say, of the words that are in the dictionary, and I love that you said that, that is the words that we use to define our life and what we're up to. One of my favorite words is alchemy, because, and I mean, the notion of alchemy is that something of a lesser, denser vibration with some internal work, we rearrange the properties and it becomes golden. It becomes something sacred. So we are going to have difficulties. I mean, I've got some stuff going on with my family. You and I were talking off camera, and there's some things that I notice. Part of what keeps the density is my shoulds about how it should be, what the good old days used to look like, or what my attachments are. And when I walk through, when I process through what's happening, this is in my book, A Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste. I articulate this kind of alchemy formula called OGLE. Should I maybe mention it?
Yeah, please.
So OGLE, it's a very strange word, and it doesn't have like the best of connotations in the world, but really at its core, it's about really looking at something, not just taking the face value aspect of like a shitty situation. We can look at anything and say, somebody that we love is sick, somebody that we love isn't talking to us, somebody that we love or ourselves, we're going through a difficult time. We could just say, it's all crap. But if you ogle it, if you really, really look at it, it starts to change. So OGLE, O stands for what's offensive. This is where you have permission to be upset, or permission to be offended, permission to be pissed off, hurt, devastated, cry your eyes out, get it out. Like, you have to have a place for it, but you need to have a plan, because a lot of times people don't let themselves feel that because they're afraid if they surrender to it, it's going to swallow them whole and there will be no end. That will, it will be the end of them. But we have to know, I have a plan. After the O, there's the G and the L and the E. So don't worry, I'm going to give myself time to empty this out. So I'm not going to have to keep living here. So once we get the O, the what's offensive, out of our system, we move to the G, which is what's good about it. Or what could be good about this. So this is where, like, when you and I were in, I don't know, what's the situation? When I went to Colombia, let's just go there. When my purse got stolen, that's one of the stories I write about. I was so, there's nothing good about having a purse stolen that has all your money, your passport, your ID, it had my laptop in it. It was like my, what? So I practiced the ogle on that. So I got out of my system what was offensive, which was so much. I was devastated. What was good, and I had to get really creative here, is it was more about what could be good about this. What could be good is that maybe because I don't have my technology, I'm not going to be distracted by it. Maybe I'll be able, what could be good is I'll be able to be more present. Maybe there's going to be a lesson here that will teach me something that will change my life. Maybe. So I had to, sometimes we have to get creative about what could or what might be good about this. But that starts to kind of shift things a little. And then we move to the L, which is the looking glass mirror. How, if I was offended by the thief, how am I also the thief? Have I ever stolen anything? And yes, when I was a teenager, I was a little shoplifter for a minute, I have to admit. I'm not proud of that, but I've taken things that weren't mine. So I can relate to that a little bit. As ashamed as I am that I did that, I have to admit that. But on a deeper level, how have I been the thief of time? How have I robbed myself of time in the past when I had perfectly good humans in front of me, where I was maybe too distracted on social media or trying to get an email done when I could have been more present? So have I ever been the thief? So we have to get a little creative with how we find ourselves in the looking glass. But once we find it, that's when the alchemy starts to kick in. And that leads us to the E. The E is now that I've seen what's offensive, what's good about it, what's in the looking glass, now I can move to the what's, how can I elevate my situation? Now, what good thing can I do to make my life a little bit better as a result of this awareness? So for example, right now, I have my phone on Do Not Disturb, because I'm talking to you. You have my 100% attention. There is nothing else in my world that's more important than this right now. And in the past, I might have been like, well, I need to kind of juggle all these things. And no, I don't. I get to be more present. And I think as a result of having all of my technology stolen from me for those 30 days, I came back a more present version of myself. I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Right, right.
So thank you to the thief.
It's great. I think these frameworks are important. Whatever way we can, like, we start with a lot of capability, and we've both talked about human potential somewhat limitless. We'll probably never find the boundary of that, right? So the work in our life is to, how close do you get to what that might have been? What are the people you hang out with? What are the techniques? What are the learnings?
Right.
How do we practice this so that it does get better? And we would never want to go back in time, right? You know, it's one of the dictionary words that I don't really relate well to is the word of regret. Like, why would one regret anything?
Right.
You were there. Like, you were in the moment, like, you decided something. You may not be proud of that moment, but we have to accept all of what we decided. And so I don't want to have regrets because, that means that now we've sort of limited ourselves. We're now pulling ourselves backwards into moments that are really not helpful to where we want to go.
Yeah. And that is so important. I'm not a Bible thumper, but there's a saying that I probably will get wrong, but it's something like this: all the years the locusts have eaten are given back to you. I tell myself that in moments that if a regret shows up, like, why didn't I know this ahead of time? How come I didn't see this before? How could I? I think, well, it's all given back because in our human time, like right now, we are on a clock. We are in time, but this is only one little part of us. The rest of us, we could say 99% of us, lives in infinity. There is nothing is wasted. All of this is material. I mean, every difficulty that you went through, we could say in your earlier years before that you leaned on at the beginning of your book when you didn't feel like you were strong and capable, that was useful material to give us some contrast for your book, to make you relatable to everybody who has ever felt weak. And I feel like this is what I've filled up this book with, A Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste, is every regret I ever had that I now no longer regret because I see it all as material. As a writer, as a creator, nothing is wasted. We can use all of it. And we're all creators, even if we don't think we are.
All artists, creators.
Yeah,
we're all there. To inspire, we can all do that.
Yeah.
Breathe. I always love the Latin for inspire is to breathe air into. That is what we are to do, right? To do that at whatever level we can.
Yes. Oh, and my
that's,
God.
That's what you are. You're an inspiration. We could talk forever. What are you up to next? I know people have long forms podcast of 2 hours and a half. I don't think anyone ever listens to the
end. God. Yeah, that's too much. I mean, on a parallel plane, we'll do it. But
for the highlights. So what's next? Like you're working on a new book. You're chasing tomorrow like with me. What's happening?
Besides reading your blog every day, I am working on, I've got a new book under my sleeve. Well, the audio book of A Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste came out. It just won. I don't know if I shared with you, it won the New York City Big Book Award for best audio book. So that's exciting. I have my dream work practitioner training for people that are interested in learning how to incorporate dream work into their existing work or as a hobby or just as a way to get better at it individually. So that's, you can go to kellysullivanwalden.com/dreamwork to find out about that. I'm also working on a new book called Dreamafesting. And this is a book that I've been sort of talking about for a long, long time. It's a very practical guide to dreams to help you do better in whatever you're dealing with in your waking life. So it's not so esoteric. It's about really bringing the esoteric nature of dreams into something that is actionable, tangible every day, a way to set your dream zone up before you go to sleep, a way to kind of bookend your dream so that every day you've got a new, it's kind of like you've got Joe's blog to pump you up and make your day better. And you'll have at least an element of your dream and you'll know what to do with that little element to have it help you as a navigational guide throughout your day. So those are some things I'm working on right now.
Well, we're going to come back and get you on when that one's done. Where can people find you? I guess you're on Instagram, the web, where your book is.
Yes, the book is everywhere books are sold. And Audible, I recommend people go to Audible and you can listen to a free sample of the book right there. It's the first book that I did my own audio version. And Joe, your next one, it's got to be you. Ooh, I can't wait for that day. That's going to be fun. I will be there for that one. I'm inserting myself. And Instagram is Kelly S. Walden. And that's the same for Twitter. Facebook is Kelly Sullivan Walden Dreams. And TikTok is a funny one because I kind of did it wrong. I was in a hurry. Kelly Sullivan Wald. It made me put on the last two letters.
Oh,
so you just kind of have to be creative and try to find me there. But I have a podcast on the Mind Body Spirit Network. It's called The Kelly Sullivan Walden Show. That's what's going on.
Kelly, thanks so much. You made my day, my weekend, excited to spend more time with you and we'll keep doing this. Best of luck. Yes. Copy of the book right here. Everyone should get a copy of the book because it's amazing.
Thank you, Joe.
You're the best.
You are the best. I'm so grateful and let's get together very soon.
All right. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you so much. Sweet dreams.